Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Enterprise Dish. I think this is going to be, well, I'd like to think they're all special. But Aaron has found some things. We've got a lot to talk about. And based on your office up there, it looks like it's a sunny day in this Seattle area.
Oh, yeah. We're right in the very best of Seattle summertime. And there's sort of this summertime drought that happens every year where you get, you know, 3 or 4 weeks of really warm, and a lot of people are surprised that Seattle gets us warm, but like 90s warm and no rain, and you know, lawns die because no one of course has irrigation systems because it rains all the time, and everyone's complaining because no one has AC because it's generally not that hot, and that's changing now as the climate changes. Everyone, myself included, has installed air conditioning and all that, but we've had kind of this backwards year where the spring was kind of dry, and then summer, July, was really had some nice rain, and the temperatures have stayed very moderate. And so some of the marketing team was just talking about the blackberries. And this is something maybe this is our dish, more of this dish at the end, but the blackberries grow wild here like crazy. And they are big and juicy and wildly abundant. So It's good right now in town, that's for sure.
Yeah, very, very interesting. I didn't actually know that. I mean, it makes sense. I guess berries grow all over. I just never really would have pegged Seattle as blackberries, but they got to grow somewhere.
Absolutely. And it's funny because when I first moved to Seattle, I saw all these people standing on the side of the road picking berries. I was like, what are these people's problems? But it's a thing, and it's great. They're just like what you'd get in the store, and sometimes better, right? Really. Ripening on the vine.
Very cool. And as Microsoft likes to gift upon us, many things have happened in the past couple weeks here. Actually, just yesterday, well, two things were announced yesterday, which we'll dive into, Patch Tuesday. But yesterday, Microsoft also announced they are, and I've got questions about this, and I'm curious of your opinions. They're announcing that Windows 10, they now have deployment assistance is in their Fast Track program, which on the cover sounds great, but then the real obvious question here is, we have 6 months left until Windows 7 goes away. Why are they doing this now and not previously?
Yeah, so the whole Fast Track thing, this is not, it's new for Windows 10, but I think they did this for 7. I think they may have even done it for XP. And this is really a thing where a lot of times it's a partner or a vendor who comes in. And sometimes if you're big enough, you'll get, you know, Microsoft employees and field people who will come in. And really a lot of it is more around planning. You know, they're not necessarily, unless you're really that big, they're not really gonna do the job for you. They're just gonna say, hey, you're here, and here are your considerations. And you're, at least this is my understanding. I looked a little bit at what they publish, it looks like the way it, more or less the way it used to be. It's nice of them to do. I think it's in their own best interest, obviously.
Sure.
And I think that's sort of the long tail answer to your question, which is they don't want to be in the situation 1, 2, 3 years from now that they are in with 7 and even with XP, where occasionally there are really major problems. They don't want it to come back to bite them, so they'll go ahead and put out some kind of fix or KB on something, even though it's technically not supported. Technically and legitimately, totally not supported. They just don't want this horrific black eye for something that they overlooked, that, you know, whoever, you know, a friendly enemy happened to find for them. So I think that's really a lot of what this is about. And a lot of times too, customers are buying this stuff. If you have enough people, you're doing, you know, VL and enterprise agreement stuff. And so they want to make sure that you're actually using it. It's a great challenge for Microsoft when customers spend a lot of money on a lot of titles that they don't end up using, or they have subscriptions, and now they're saying, oh, well, we're going to back off from E5 because all we need is E3, you know, at a subscription level. We don't use any of those features or any of the additional products that ride along with it. In fact, I'm not even sure we'd use all of E3, but it's more than what we need, and we'll save, you know, whatever, you know, $20,000 a month, you know, ad infinitum. And, you know, we're that much farther ahead. So I think there are a lot of those really kind of fundamental business questions that customers are trying to answer. Microsoft is out, you know, kind of doing the dance with customers long enough and well enough to know that this is very important to see to the timely execution of.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And speaking of execution, this is a perfect little segue here, is Microsoft released Patch Tuesday this week, and there's a couple really nasty remote code executions, once again relating to the remote desktop services, and is infecting Windows 7, Windows Server 2008 R2, SP1, which is always still a mouthful to say, Server 2012, 8.1, Server 2012 R2, and all of your flavors of Windows 10. They're calling this a wormable exploit, which means that, hey, once they get in, they can kind of jump around, and it's a nasty one.
It sounds bad. It may be slightly less bad than it looks on these, is sort of our takeaway. These may not be as bad as they appear. And the reason is, I don't believe, my understanding is, these are not exploitable via RDP. Mm-hmm. And if you have NLA turned on, which is on by default in Windows 10, mm-hmm. then you'd have to authenticate anyway. Gotcha. So there's a couple layers here that suggest, yes, the vulnerability exists, but only if you're really wide open are you really at meaningful risk. Should you take care of these things? For sure you should. Mm-hmm. But sort of the kind of moment-to-moment risk you're under is maybe not as egregious as it looks or sounds.
Gotcha.
So again, this is a scenario where, as IT people, if we are reasonably buttoned up and have, you know, sort of the intelligent switches turned on that are built into the product for exactly this purpose, then you start with, you know, a lower risk threshold to begin with. So that when some of these things are discovered, well, okay, fine, yeah, let's make sure all the holes are covered up, but we already have a bridge over everything. So what's the risk of us twisting an ankle anyway? Right. Does that make sense?
Yep.
So it's sort of a bit of a head scratcher, but some of this goes back to questions that we've been asking for a while, which is, so much of this is going so fast. You know, these RDS fixes have been kind of, you know, coming and I think since like May or April, we've had a few of these.
About right.
You know, are we trying to move too fast doing, you know, features and fixes, and should they, you know, as we've discussed in past discussions, you know, be handled separately, like maybe in a TikTok kind of fashion, do one set of fixes, one set of features, you know, is it worth slowing down a little bit and really fixing everything properly one time so we are not introducing other new problems, for example. You know, we're sort of trying to figure out from our perspective how we would do it, and then how that would translate into a strategy of how we would, you know, apply these as they go, right?
Yep. And it's worth pointing out that Microsoft says that they actually discovered this themselves, and it was during their own hardening of their own code. And that there's no known exploitable exploits in the wild at this time.
That's right. And that's also unusual. That's a very, very good point that, you know, so often, and we've talked about this in the past as well, that, you know, Google finds it, or, you know, somebody else finds it, or, you know, a security firm XYZ finds it. And now here we are where, you know, as unusual as it, ironic, and unusual as it seems, Microsoft found these themselves is sort of interesting. And so what was the path for that? Was that internal discovery? Was that a customer or a partner reported thing? You know, how did these come to light? You know, that is not, at least in the past year, how we often find these exploits. These are usually things that are reported, and they're very forthcoming, you know, fortunately, about where the source of the report comes from, and you know, gives us reassurance about the, you know, friendly community that we live in as technical people and all of that. But yeah, that is a little bit unusual.
And then word on the street here is that you guys actually found a bug recently.
Yeah. And it sort of plays along the same note of some of this foregoing discussion, which is, you know, the speed of execution and the risk of laying these things in. So the scenario is that we were helping a customer, and they were running into a sysprep issue. And we were sort of scratching our heads, and we all joke internally that so often the issues that we end up troubleshooting for our customers have nothing to do with our actual product, and that we are, you know, grossly underpaid IT consultants every bit as much as we are, you know, doing the service that we're contracted to do, supporting the product. But we determined and were able to successfully reproduce from the July 26 cumulative update that an installation of that fundamentally broke SysPrep, and I've got some detailed notes I'm going to refer to here. If you installed it, and there, you know, and if you look at that KB, it ends in 903. There's no mention of SysPrep anywhere. But if you installed it, SysPrep would return an unable to validate the OS error.
Oh.
And so we were like, wow, that's really weird. And because we rely on it for our product, we were really nervous that we had a really serious fundamental issue. Grub around and realize that it's related to the July 26 update. And the crazy thing about that is we don't know at a root cause level what's going on, but what we did find is that that same KB also included a bunch of autopilot fixes. Those autopilot fixes are not disclosed in the KB. You have to look at another support article. So, and I can I'll tweet this out or put it in some comments on this of what those articles are. But further to the head scratching here is that today's, well, was it today's, yesterday's Patch Tuesday update, I installed it today, maybe that's why I'm thinking it's today, doesn't mention that it fixes all those autopilot issues that were broken by the July issue that came out as well. So we've got kind of this interesting series of, you know, sort of this witch's brew of unstated fixes and breaking things, and now fixes to the broken things from the fixes before.
Right. Interesting. Well, that's scary in some regard for your exact scenario. I mean, obviously I'm never going to hear about that. It's not impacting me, but your company depends on this type of stuff. And I'm sure there's other companies out there as well. And if Microsoft's not documenting what they're shipping properly, that's a cause for some concern there.
Certainly not exhaustively. And the question is why, right? Is it that autopilot isn't so widely adopted that they need to mention that in the KB? Is it that, you know, they just consider some of those more service-oriented things as sort of a different communication stream than sort of mainstream Windows? You know, and a related thing is that this August update, we found another support article that says that it may break Pixie, but it, as it's delivered via SCCM. So this directly implicates so many of us who deal with these tools. We haven't tested it, we just saw the article, but in relation to all these other, you know, kind of discussion items, it is a little bit of a head scratcher. And so, you know, you address these vulnerabilities, you know, wormable things in RDS or whatever, and it causes these other issues. You know, you've got NLA enabled, but you know that by patching the wormable thing, you're going to create other issues for other teams that are doing important work that maybe you have a Microsoft partner engaged to help you with. So now it's, you know, time is money. And so what kind of trade-offs do you make, right? We're back to this philosophical discussion of how you're prioritizing some of these work streams and sort of the trust and due diligence that you're going to invest in doing. And again, so my advice, you know, has been, oh, test, great, except to the extent that you have these 0 days and, you know, other things presenting themselves. So do you patch and pray? Because are you not really going to find the issues until it's really out organizationally and affecting, you know, people at scale that you're going to find some of these edge cases? It's tricky. There's not, unfortunately, a really great straightforward answer. I wish I wish there was. I wish there was a simple truth to all of this, but this is software, you know.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Speaking of crazy, well, this isn't really crazy. This is just a listener question has come in since we've last chatted. And Mr. Nicholas C. writes in, he says, "We have a detached Windows 7 CNC milling machine, and we are afraid of updating it to Windows 10, as these machines are critical to our daily operation. Is it safe to keep this machine on an old OS if it is not connected to the internet?" So this is clearly a smaller business, and they've got mission critical hardware that is not connected to the internet, and it's on 7. What's your thought there?
Nicholas is in an interesting situation, and you see this. You know, I often laugh when I'm in, you know, wherever it is, a hospital, yep, or wherever, where they have a specialized device. And I think this is exactly Nicholas's scenario. You've got this specialized device, relies on this very specific piece of software that was written for this very specific operating system. The vendor might be charging an astronomical amount of money to give you an upgrade, mm-hmm, or they might say, in order to upgrade to Windows 10, you need to buy this new magical CNC machine that's $500,000. But unfortunately, the Windows 10 version of the software is not compatible with the version you have. So, now Nicholas and his team are scratching their chins to say, all right, obviously we're not going to drop $500,000 on a new CNC device, or whatever it might be, $1 million to $5 million, who knows, just to upgrade the software and have a patched OS. What do you do? The question I would ask in return is the device really disconnected? Mm-hmm. How do you get the plans for the device onto the device? Do you use, is it connected actually to the LAN in some way and you just kind of plug it in quickly and unplug it? Do you stick a USB stick into it? Do you, you know, how is that getting information, the instructions to do what you have it do? And that's where the risk presents itself. Mm-hmm. Even if the machine is totally disconnected, you have some mechanism that's giving it information. And that could be a source. So, and this is the consideration for any device in this scenario. This is a great example of one of these sort of scenarios that becomes a more generic problem of thinking that you have an edge device that is benign when really, mm-hmm, yeah, it could dirty things up, because that USB key you're using goes into and out of that and then into and out of a network connected device. And some really smart black hat made a executable that they knew they could get onto Windows 7 and do some dirty work and then plug back into the network and run wild on your Windows 10 based network and get it all, mm-hmm, right? Who knows? But that's the thing you have to be concerned about. If indeed the device is truly disconnected and you have, who knows, maybe you're using a read-only media, one-time use kind of thing. Yeah, you know, you're burning a CD or a DVD and you're sticking that in there, and when it's done, that CD or DVD goes in the garbage, or a third party is giving you, you know, you're a vendor to somebody else, a big aerospace company or something, and they're handing you the media and it's single use. Okay, once again, you're probably in a safe place. The other thing to consider to preempt any of that, and the other question is, could someone, you know, does it have a network card and could you plug a network cable into it and create some exposure that way? A bad actor comes in, knows you have that device, and exploits it. You know, epoxy closed anything that you don't need on that device and ensure that it couldn't be exploited, right? Even if you have that. But yeah, all things being equal, if it is truly disconnected and it's a one-way trip with information, you technically are okay. But there's, I don't know. I would be very, very wary of the ways in which that could be exploited by even, you know, any of us who have good intentions, yeah, but are just maybe careless for a moment with a USB stick. That's where they get you.
Yep, it's an interesting one because to your point, it is physically disconnected, right? There's no Ethernet cord in there. But if you're popping that USB in and out, ransomware is going to do you a lot more damage than that new CNC milling machine or the upgrade or whatever it is going to cost you to move. So
that's exactly right. That's exactly right. And this is an unfortunately very common scenario, right? Not only in manufacturing and healthcare, like I mentioned, all over the place. You look around, a lot of people have these kinds of devices, and it might be a function of, you know, the ability to upgrade the software might be a function of budget. It might be a function of sort of the technical acumen and priorities of the organization. There are a lot of factors that play into this, but it only takes one incident to compromise the entire organization. So then all of a sudden, $200,000, $500,000 for, you know, an entirely new platform for this manufacturing operation starts looking pretty affordable, right? I mean, that's the dynamics of the modern world.
Yeah, this is very partially related. I have a friend who works in the industry, and he says whenever he needs a CapEx expense, such as upgrading or whatever, if you can put it in somebody else's budget other than IT, it's more likely to get approved. So
yeah, I mean, and there's some truth to that, right? And how can you make friends who are going to kind of help you achieve your goals, right? We have a goal as a team to be as productive as possible. You want to have a certain project completed well. As long as we're doing that, we can do these other things and broaden, right? Put sort of a halo around that project that helps, you know, harden the edge or, you know, kind of advance a couple other strategic agenda items. Yeah, that's a very, very smart play, definitely.
Yep, when he wrote this question, and we'll kind of wrap it up on this one, my initial thought was, if the weakest part of your infrastructure security is the thing that keeps you in business, think really hard about not wanting to spend money on it. That is just, you know, depending on your scenario, just keep in mind that you're going cheap on the thing that is literally paying the bills. So
yeah, that's a great point, right? And so to put a slightly finer point on it for Nicholas, is what you do and all you do centered around that machine? Is that really the crux of it? Or are you doing, you know, is that sort of a side show? And your main thing is you warehouse and inventory tons of, you know, scale product that, you know, you're importing and selling at volume. And occasionally you do some custom stuff with this machine. Then maybe it's a different calculus. But to your point, indeed, if that's the heart and soul, man, yeah, then sort of it makes it a different discussion when you get to, you know, the CEO's office to say, look, here's really the pill that we're going to have to swallow. That's a very fair point.
Yep. You got a few months, well, about five or so to figure that out. Not a lot of time, but if it's only one machine, you've got a little bit of time to play around to figure out what you're going to do. But
true. And if history is any example or guide, you know, the really bad stuff, they're still putting out the occasional patch for XP. So you might take the long view on this one, Nicholas, and say, oh, you know, today, no. Tomorrow, no. This needs to become a strategic priority in 12 to 18 months. You know, what can we do about this? Could you use virtualization, for example, to protect this in some way? Could you wrap this in some kind of shell that allows you to, you know, tweak or modify the way that you're transmitting information in and out of that to kind of sanitize the edge in that way, right? There's got to be all kinds of creative solutions. There's a litany of problems that would create too. Driver issues, right? You're driving some big gnarly device with it, you know, a bunch of other questions, but there might be some alternative creative solutions that would at least buy you a little more time and give you a little better hygiene as you creep toward the long-term solution. So
Nicholas, we would love a follow-up from you. I'll email him back with the link to this episode once it's live, but we would love a follow-up to see what you actually end up doing.
Yeah, I'd be very curious as well, certainly.
Very, very curious. And so as we wrap it up here on the back of the book, Mr. Aaron, we started talking about blackberries. While it is not technically near the end of summer, my daughter has her first day of school today, so things are really kind of moving along here. But what is happening with blackberries up there?
Yeah, so as I was saying, they're getting robust and the picking is happening. And I'm always amazed when people pick blackberries by the side of the road, which is sort of commonplace here because they grow in such great abundance. Mm-hmm. They even offer to bring goats to your property to eat all the blackberries. So they're gone for good. They're that aggressive and invasive. But you know, there's nothing better than sort of this garden-like experience of pulling something that grows from the earth and just putting it in your mouth and having it be unbelievably delicious.
Oh, sure.
You know, and this is just the time of year. The other thing that happens this time of year, we're sort of in the late prime of salmon season, which in the Northwest is a spectacular occurrence, at least for those of us who like fish. Now, I grew up, I don't know if we've had this conversation, I grew up in the Midwest, which is where you live, where fish is sort of a four-letter word, and you know, you're eating lake fish, and you know, it's freshwater stuff, and it's kind of fun, it's like a fun sport. But you know, the seafood we get here, all this wild Alaskan
it's a different breed.
Seafood is just phenomenal. Yep. And so we take it to these other extraordinary levels where we're shopping for our fish by, you know, species and the river it swims up, right? It's kind of provenance, on and on and on. Oh, we want, you know, Pacific caught Copper River coho salmon, and you know, everyone goes crazy for that, or whatever it might be, right? Yep. And you have your preparations for the different kind, you know, parts of the year and what fish you have and its characteristics. Some of them are, you know, sweeter, and some of them are richer, and it's just an amazing time to be eating in the Pacific Northwest of the U.S. That's for sure.
That sounds
so. We're gonna stay in front of the grill until the rain comes.
Yeah, I grill right up until typically the first snow of the year, and then that's about it.
And then which for you around there might be in just a few weeks, right? I mean, the first snow could happen in late September, right?
Yeah, that's a little bit further north. We usually get our first snow, I want to say November-ish.
November.
But northern Ohio, especially into Michigan, I mean, that's not unheard of that, you know, they're wrapping up. We were actually up in the very top of North Michigan about 2 weeks ago. And the highs are only in the mid 70s, so it's it was amazing.
Yeah, we growing up in Minnesota, we very much had the early cold snap where you were winterizing for sure in September, right? You were done. The hoses coiled up, put away, the little protective things over the hose bibs and everything, right?
Yep.
So
yeah, Halloween's always an interesting one because it can be anywhere from 85 degrees to 2 inches of snow on the ground. Mm-hmm. You just, it's impossible to plan for.
So right, it is, these days.
I don't know. I really enjoy the fall. The fall is, it's a fun time of the year.
I agree.
All right, Mr. Aaron. Well, we very much appreciate you taking time out of your busy day. There's a lot going on. The busy season is heading upon us. We have Ignite coming up soon, and things are only ramping up. Until then, to everybody else, make sure you hit those subscribe buttons down below, and we'll catch all of you right back here next time.